Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
Oh, you're not going to do a voice?
No, because you did a funny voice. Welcome to 101 films that
you should have seen. We'll get this right.
Probably. Halloween special.
Ooh.
So you're gonna do the whole thing in a ghostly Dracula.
Yes.
Voice. Good.
I want to suck your blood.
Oh no, that's the wrong film.
What? Yes, the Halloween special.
Yeah.
We've spent like the last 20 minutes downloading ludicrous sound effects. So, like a terrible radio DJ, we're gonna be interspersing. I'm sure already because I'm editing this one. I've already probably put a couple of screams in here. And here, maybe a wolf, werewolf howl, and maybe just to be funny, I won't put one of those. Maybe I'll make myself look foolish. I'll on purpose leave one off.
You know, you're just making work for yourself. You realise?
I know. Well, you know, I feel guilty after our last blog where you did all the work. I feel like I should take up the lion's share this time.
Fair enough.
So, in our Halloween special, we are going to cover Dracula.
Dracula!
Dracula. It's so hard not to do that voice when you say
love it.
Dracula.
It's not even the right film. I mean,
no, exactly. That's we're covering Dracula, the Hammer Horror version from 1958.
Yep. Where Dracula barely speaks a word in the entire thing.
It's true, yeah. We won't go into that because that might be one of my questions.
I can't really get into the swing of this.
So this is my film choice because you had not seen Dracula before, is that right?
No.
You'd not seen it. It wasn't one of those things when you started to watch it, like, oh, I think maybe.
No,
I
not
seen
another
this.
One of those, no.
Oh, right, so you hadn't seen it at all?
Nope, not at all. I've seen Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola film.
All right, okay, excellent.
So, does that help?
Well, I've not seen that, so perhaps we should have.
I've read the book as well.
Yes, I mean, I've read the book. I've seen, obviously, this one, Dracula. I've seen. I think I've seen the Bela. Bela Lugosi version, I think.
I don't think I've seen that.
I'm not sure if it's really stuck in my mind though, but I think maybe when I was quite young.
I think we established earlier that we've both seen Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I've seen bits of it. Yeah, I mean that's a whole different podcast. That is, we could talk about that for loads. But I mean, but the reason why I suppose we could have done the other Dracula, but I really want to do this Dracula because this is the one when I think of the character Dracula, I see Christopher Lee.
Yeah,
I think he's my Dracula.
Okay.
And also, I have a real affection for Hammer horror films.
I saw you've got quite a few of them, haven't you? And you've got all those old books about horror films. What is that one you showed me last time?
What?
You know, that special book you showed me when we were alone.
I've not really.
With all the pictures.
Well, I've got three Hammer horror films, which isn't that many.
Oh, right. I thought you had more.
No, I bought a box set of. For like 15 quid once of the original Dracula, the original Frankenstein, and the original Mummy, the Hammer horror versions.
Oh.
But I've seen quite a few over the years. I've seen, and like a lot of it was due to my dad always used to quite like kind of spooky films and horror films. And I used to show them a lot on TV. I remember they seemed to show Hammer horror films quite a bit. Late at night on television. I remember often watching them with my dad sort of around 10 o'clock. So, so I've got quite, you know, I quite like them. There's a certain, there's loads of loads of books and documentaries all about the, you know, how the particular look and feel of a Hammer horror film and what defines it as a Hammer horror film.
Yeah.
Which we'll touch on, I suppose.
See, I was actually quite surprised to discover this was 1958. This was made. It felt like a little ahead of its time, I think.
Well, it was because, we can go into that if you like.
We're jumping ahead of.
Yeah, we are. We're jumping ahead of ourselves. So, Dracula, 1958, starring Christopher Lee as the titular character, Dracula, with Peter Cushing as Van Helsing, And for the other characters, it's funny. We'll go into it. I mean, because they change the characters a fair bit, and they swap them around. But we also have Michael Gough. How do you pronounce that?
I don't know. Is it Gough or Gough? I'm not sure. I feel terrible. I should know.
Playing Arthur Homewood.
Yeah.
Carol Marsh as Lucy Homewood, and Melissa Stribling as Mina Homewood. Those are the main characters.
I don't know any of these except for the first two, Peter Cushing and Chris.
And of course, we can forget Jonathan Harker, played by John Van Essen. The only reason I know that is because we've got the IMDb.
Yeah, database. Exactly. I have no idea. Yeah, to be fair, that one, and that one.
You realise they can't actually see us.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Right, okay.
They're all absolutely terrible. That one and that one were really good.
So okay. Why are you not using the character name? Why is this only a secret between me and you? You don't want the people at home to know what you like.
I'll try to keep some suspense for later on.
Yeah, after all, it's the Halloween!
Whoa!
We'll have the lightning there.
Yeah, no, I was pointing at Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee were brilliant in this film.
I think Michael Gough...
slash Gough.
playing Arthur Homewood isn't bad.
Oh, there are some bits he's awful.
Yeah.
There are some bits that actually made me laugh out loud.
But it's, true. And
although he did go on to play, I realised after reading IMDb that he wanted to play the Alfred in the 1989 Tim Burton Batman film.
I'd say, funny enough, I was going to have that as one of my trivia questions, then I forgot. I knew that, then I forgot, because I was going to say, how do bats connect? Films? Or something. I hadn't worked the question out in my head, but I was going to do that. But then I completely forgot to write that down.
I also think
Carol Marsh as Lucy Homewood isn't bad, simply because all she kind of plays, especially when she's become a vampire.
She's got really scary eyes.
I think she is actually quite good.
Yeah, she is quite good.
Anyway, so... I suppose a little bit about how, I mean, I know this, and I'm perhaps a few of the people, I mean, if anyone is listening to this, I'm sure they know this as well, but Dracula is marks, I suppose, a real turning point in for Hammer, in the sense that, the Universal horror films, it's hard for us to remember now, but they were like the defining... film images of those characters of a werewolf, Dracula or Frankenstein, that in a way almost just as now when someone says they're remaking that film, it must have been the exact, and I think it was very much the same kind of idea, like they're making Dracula, how can you remake Dracula? The Bela Lugosi version is the definitive, how can they improve on that? And I think the fantastic thing about that, the Hammer horror films, it ramps up the horror to whereas the Universal ones are really good, but and they have their kind of horrific moments, but these are more like almost they're the bridge between those Universal Studios horror films and like 1980s slasher films. Because there's that.
Well, I think the 1930s films, all the horror kind of happened off screen, really.
There's a real sense of suspense and perhaps creeping dread, I suppose. Whereas these, they're quite visceral. And
there's a lot of bright red, unconvincing fake blood.
That's a real thing about Hammer horror films. The blood is so bright. Yeah. And it's the thing, they're doing that on purpose because they're taking advantage of the fact they're in colour.
Yeah.
Because all those Universal films were, of course, in black and white. And here we are, a horror film in bright, really vivid Technicolor, and that blood, and it's all the fonts of all the titles when they first come up, blood red, and it's really
mysterious blood dripping from nowhere,
and it's a real, it's kind of almost like right from the off, it's almost feeling like we're not going to take any prisoners here. This is going to be strong stuff. The opening times of Dracula with the horse and carriage is thundering through like the countryside, going to Castle Dracula.
I thought that was quite a good bit actually. That did work quite well. The carriage going through the forest. I thought it was quite a nice scene.
I think the whole film is quite well shot. It moves. we've talked about this before we watched it. One of the things I was wary of is that we're going to end up saying how brilliant this is simply because it was so short. And of course, when we're doing this podcast, it's great to have a short film, but it just moves at a real blistering pace.
Yeah.
Now you've read the original Dracula.
Yes,
I have.
It's very slow. Dracula,
it is. Yes, it is. I mean, it's a very typical 19th century novel, isn't it?
It's interesting, actually. Watching this film, I mean, I know you said, you know, it does move at quite a pace, and the screenwriters really did make a big effort to make it move faster. But still watching it, I was thinking, oh, this is slow.
Really, that's interesting.
I was just thinking, oh, come on, because we're so used now to kind of films that start with a bang, you know.
Yeah.
Start with, you know, if the first killing doesn't happen in the first 2 minutes, then it's like, oh god, this is slow.
Yeah.
You know? So that was one thing that struck me. But then I remember reading the book and thinking, oh, this is really slow.
I mean, they cut so much out.
They did. Yeah,
you could huge amounts out from the book.
Yeah, it's quite different from the book, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah.
But not as different, I think, as... Well, I think all of the film versions have taken liberties. I don't think there's actually... Possibly, well, I don't know, the 1992 version with Keanu Reeves, there was...
That's supposed to be the closest, isn't it?
Supposed to be the closest, but even that's quite a distance.
Those 90s versions were... And they're similar to the Frankenstein with Robert De Niro. What's that called?
I think it's just called Frankenstein,
yeah,
isn't it?
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah, Mary Shelley's
Frankenstein. It was like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Yeah, trying to get back to the original source text.
Yeah.
And I suppose they're doing their best to sort of stay rigid to, you know. But I think the great thing about Dracula is that it maintains the kind of the sense of the book. It maintains the basic ideas of the book.
Well, it sets in the Victorian period for a start.
Yeah, we'll come to the big differences in a bit. We haven't done our pitch yet, have we? What would you say the pitch of Dracula is?
The pitch? I think you've said it really. Blood!
Yeah, blood. Blood and sex.
Blood and sex.
It's pretty much the pitch for the 58 Dracula. There's loads I want to talk about, but I think to start with, I was the violence, I think, of the thing. Now, I would say, obviously, it's quite tame by today's standards. Do you think we have to recount the storyline of Dracula?
I don't think we do, no.
Do all of you at home know?
We'll assume the very basic assume idea. The viewers... They go to Dracula's castle.
Jonathan Harker goes to Dracula's castle. He sets out to destroy Dracula.
Which is a difference from the book. Yeah. In the book, he's an innocent solicitor turns... And then he kind of stumbles into this... horror, whereas in the film
we'll talk about the book separately, but we're just in this version of the film, Jonathan Harker goes to Dracula to destroy him. He's pretending to be a librarian. Turns up, he gets attacked by Dracula's kind of wife or girlfriend or woman slave. I believe that's what they call them, vampires, don't they?
What? Get.
G-E-T.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something
new every day.
Jonathan has the picture of his loved one, Lucy Homewood. Jonathan's killed by Dracula, and Dracula because Dracula's wife was killed by Jonathan. He kind of decides to have revenge on him by seducing and destroying Lucy. And then Van Helsing, played by Peter Cushing, who's a friend of Jonathan Harker's, you know, kind of uncovers this. And tries to stop him and tries to destroy Dracula.
And chaos ensues.
And Peter Cushing's character, Van Helsing, is helped by Lucy's brother, Arthur, and his wife, Mina.
It's quite interesting. I mean, although it does deviate quite a lot from the book.
Hugely,
it's,
we'll talk about, yeah.
Yeah, it's, it is quite a strong thing. One thing I should say now, actually, is we might want to hold on to your seat for this one.
Okay.
Is that I didn't actually like it very much.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
I watched it with Flick the other night, and we both just kind of sat there watching, going, "Yeah, this is not very good."
Oh, okay.
It was just basically, I think, but after I had kind of watched it, and then I read about it, and I read about people's opinions about it and the way it fell into the context, I enjoyed viewing it in the historical context a lot more than enjoyed watching the film.
That probably makes sense, yeah.
So I think if you watch the film knowing, you know, that it was the revolution in the depiction of Dracula and the fact that, you know, this version concentrated a lot more on the sex and the idea that he was this kind of virile being, whereas before he'd been depicted as basically a walking corpse.
Yeah.
If you kind of knew that and you kind of could put yourself in the audiences of the day, then I think you get a lot more out of it.
I think, well, there's two things there. I mean, one of the reasons why I quite like this film is because I saw it at a relatively young age.
Okay.
Where the kind of, the violence and the sex have a much more of an impact. I probably saw it when I was about 10 or 11 years old. So, of course, it seems much more brutal. I suppose in a funny way, the average 11-year-old in 1991 is probably equivalent to a 30-year-old in 1958. So, in the terms of their kind of innocence or perception of things. So, so I saw it there. And secondly, I just see, similar to you, just now I see it very much as a very interesting spin on an old character. And a character that's still around today, and especially now with all the kind of vampire stuff going on, Twilight and True Blood, all that stuff. And it's interesting that obviously it was always there in the book, but the Hammer version of Dracula was the first one to really push the sex side of Dracula, which was, part of the book, but really make that the explicit sales point. And it's funny how that's kind of now, that the sex and the idea of being, it's carried on in exactly. Now when we think of vampires, we think of them as seducers.
And exactly, and that's my point. When I was watching the film, I was thinking, oh, this is so cliched. And then it was only afterwards that I kind of realised, actually, this is where the cliché started about the kind of sexy vampire kind of thing.
I mean, even now, it's still quite shocking is the wrong word. It still surprised me, I guess, quite how, Dracula has decided to destroy Lucy, the Jonathan's fiance, and so she's at home being looked after by, because it sort of cuts, doesn't it? Van Helsing, Peter Cushing's character, sort of finds Jonathan's dead body, and then he goes back, and Dracula's already kind of worming his way in, isn't he? So he's already been to see Lucy a few times. So you kind of see a sequence where Lucy's mysteriously ill. The doctor sort of sees her and says, oh, some kind of blood disorder. Or, just keep plenty of fresh air, keep that window open. And then, she's like, oh, okay. And then they leave. And then she sort of springs up as soon as they've all left the room, checks the room is locked, opens the window even wider and lies back and then waits. And then when Dracula appears, just her expression, it's just this real mixture of, like, one, fear, but also, like, submission and excitement. And it's really sexualized. That entire bit is a real kind of, like, she kind of lays back and offers herself to him.
Yeah.
And he kind of walks in with that kind of slightly sleazy leer in his eyes. It's not, he's not being a murderer. It's completely, he's going to have sex with her. That's really what you kind of sort of,
yeah, and it's if you'll pardon the pun, rammed home even further later on.
Is that really a pun?
I don't know. Euphemism? Who knows?
Surely it would be something like staked home. That would be kind of, no, anyway.
But later on when he seduces Mina, there's even more.
Oh, that's really much so.
Yeah.
And I one of the big changes from the book to the film is that the whole of the film is set in a kind of Germanic sort of nondescript country, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got, this is something I wanted to talk about, is actually the accents, or the lack of accents.
Oh, yeah, well, you see, in a funny way though, once I realised, I've kind of forgotten that they did, because the whole thing about Dracula is a foreign invader.
Yeah.
It's, I've read various things about it. It's actually one of the first kind of invasion stories of Britain being invaded by a foreigner.
Yeah.
So and that had that kind of idea was again came up in War of the Worlds. It came up in the Battle of Dorking, which is a famous short story about Prussians invading Britain, and all the other kind of various stories that are quite inherent in British culture about Britain being invaded. It seems to be a weird peccadillo we have about that, because I guess we haven't been invaded in so long as we're in Ireland as yeah. well.
But we've had our fair share
of dangers, I guess. Yeah. But it's been like one of those things, and they, you know, people often talk about Dracula actually being one of the first of being this idea of a foreign invader
mm-hmm.
coming here to take our women and
taking our women.
Yeah, and but the interesting thing, I wonder, you know, a lot of people look at the book of the idea of Dracula. One of the reasons why it has even more of a kind of like fear for British men in particular is this idea that British men can't really match up to a suave, sophisticated European guy. So, you know, if you went on holiday to the Transvaal with your girlfriend, she would immediately be seduced by some dashing count, whereas you'd be like, I've got what's-its. Do you want a what's-it? Oh, no, he's dancing with her and impressing her. And
Do the Macarena. I could do the Macarena.
You'll be trying to impress. Imagine if you and Flick perhaps went to the Transvaal on a holiday.
The Transvaal. Why the Transvaal?
I know, it's not Transvaal. That's like a joke from The Young Ones. where Alexis Sal plays a vampire. He plays a South African vampire. Because I'm from the Transvaal.
I'm glad we've got the humour in there for South Africans.
It's more to the people who know The Young Ones. you and Flick go on holiday to Transylvania, and she's being dazzled by a foreign count who's perhaps whining and dining her and then dancing with her in a really perhaps seductive manner.
Yeah.
How would you impress her? What, show her the high score on your on your iPhone without on something? Or
I just tell her I'd beat her score in Angry Birds. She'd be away from the count in a minute. She'd be like, right.
But I don't know. Perhaps this isn't establishing something that a fear of my own. But do you? I think that's a peculiarly British fear.
I don't think so. I think it's pretty standard among all men. I think. Someone more handsome and better than you coming along.
Maybe it's because we were always, especially back then, I mean less so now, but so uptight. I guess perhaps there was the idea that people on the continent would be less uptight. I don't know. Mm,
who knows?
But should we do the trivia quiz, actually? I think we should get the trivia quiz out the way.
I like the trivia quiz.
Trivia quiz.
Oh, sound effect. You put a sound effect in.
Right, okay. So, I wrote down four, luckily.
Okay.
You accidentally said one of the answers to one of the questions, so I know not to ask you that.
Okay, good. All right, well, do you want to go first, then?
Okay, all right, so I've got a mixture of questions here.
Okay.
For you, Lewis.
All right.
And I don't think they're as hard. I don't think they're as hard as perhaps some of the ones I've come up with in other podcasts. First of all, what does Van Helsing recommend to drink after a blood transfusion?
I remember this because it made me laugh. It was tea, coffee, or even better, wine.
Okay. Christopher Lee has only a tiny number of lines in the film. How many?
Oh, I know this because I read it on the Wikipedia page.
Oh, dear. You're going to...
13.
13, okay. And finally, what is the American title of the film?
The Horror of Dracula.
Okay, all right. And do you want to ask me your thing?
Right, here we go. I think you'll get these quite easily. All right, what Hammer Dracula film did Christopher Lee start in after Dracula?
I can't remember now. Is it The Prince of Darkness?
Okay. Next one. In 1959, Cushing and Lee starred opposite each other in two movies. What were they?
Ooh.
I'll give you a half point for each.
Okay. Frankenstein and The Mummy, I think.
Okay. And number three, what was Lucy's surname in the original Bram Stoker novel?
Ah, right, okay. Let me think this. That's annoying.
Do you want a hint?
Yes.
There's a very famous Haley with this surname.
Haley?
Well, you might not have heard of her, I don't know. A favourite of our grandparents. But current. She's current.
That's the most confusing clue. She's
a young girl called Hayley who sings very sweetly. She's right. Like the modern Charlotte Church.
Okay, now I've not heard of her at
all.
Okay,
well.
I do know it, but as soon as you tell me, I'm going to kick myself because I do know it, but I can't think of it right now. I can't.
Okay.
So you got all of yours right.
Did I?
Yes, you did. Well done.
Yes!
The other question I was going to ask, which you answered before, was what was Jonathan Harker's profession in the book?
Ah, right. Solicitor.
Yes.
There we go. Okay, what is yours? Yeah, you got the first one right. It was Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Ooh, that's good. I almost said Scars of Dracula. So,
that was good. 1959, Cushing and Lee starred in The Mummy and The Hound of the Baskervilles.
Ah! Because I thought Frankenstein's before Dracula.
It is, yes.
I knew that didn't. When you said 59, I was like, that was the only other one I could think of. Oh, well.
And the last one was, what was Lucy's surname? Westenra.
Ah!
There's a famous Hayley Westenra.
Right, no, I've never heard of her.
My granddad's favourite.
Good. Good. Right. What should we talk about now?
What should we talk about? let's talk about the acting.
Yes, okay. Now, we've already touched on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, first, I'm actually going to introduce a subsection of acting. The comedy yokel characters.
Oh, and
there were
about three.
There was the innkeeper, who wasn't too bad.
He was... I don't know, where did they get that guy from?
But the guy who runs up the postal... office, the kind of, or the border patroller.
It's not really clear, is it? It's a customs post.
Yeah, customs post, I think. Yeah. He's, I mean, it's weird how, like, all the others play dead straight, then they've just got him, a comical customs guy, running through the, because he closes the road.
The pole across the road.
Yeah, put that where is the toll. The barrier across the road, and then they crash through it. Then he repairs it, and then immediately they crash through it again. It's like, oh god.
really weird.
I also like the really posh Cockney boy who delivers the message to Mina.
It's awful.
Like Dracula gives their bite.
Oh my god.
Hello, miss. Yeah, you got to go. Husband Arthur wants to see you. I don't know. I just got given the message.
That's quite a good impression.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's very good.
I think my favourite though is the Undertaker. Undertaker. I mean, what the hell's going on there?
What's the joke he says? Like,
I don't know. He was like, "Now where is it? I've put it around here somewhere. Where's that coffin?"
It's strange.
He's like W.C. Fields or something.
And I'll tell you what, that is so uniquely British.
Yeah.
Just sticking in comedy characters into horror films. No one else would bother doing that.
It was bizarre. Very strange. Not good though. I'd like to say
it isn't
a good thing.
Do you know what it made me think of? It actually made me think of all those terrible kind of 70s sex comedies, you know, like the Adventures of a Driver. What's the Driver Instructor and
The
Adventures of
called.
A Window Cleaner with Robert. Is it Robert Asquith? Something like that. Robin Asquith, I think. Anyway, it just reminded me of that because although, yeah, it's that weird kind of okay, we're gonna have some naked ladies, but we're gonna surround that by just some really terrible comic actors, and it kind of had the same like. It's almost like we can't have the horror, we can't have the sex, we have to also have some bumbling, idiotic characters.
That we can't be serious all the time.
No.
It's very strange.
But it's, I mean, Hammer as a studio went on to make the Yonderbusses film, so...
Did they really?
Yeah, they did.
God.
It was their
it's another strike against their good name.
Big money spinner. That's where they made
Yeah, that was the
money.
Biggest... Didn't you tell me that was
the
biggest
film? The first Yonderbusses film outgrossed Bond in Britain the year it was released, yeah.
Oh my god. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, like, going back to what I was saying earlier, like, I don't think, like, if you just took this film now and just put it in front of a modern audience, didn't tell them about where it was from and just said, okay, watch this. Surely on the terrible piss poor acting from most of the film, I don't think it stands up as a good film.
Yeah.
However, Peter Cushing is just like a shining beacon.
Yeah, Peter Cushing.
He's amazing in this film.
Yeah. He just has that great combination of slightly cold and detached, but also with enough humanity and enough, yeah, he's kind of, the whole time you can see him calculating. You can totally understand why he became an on-screen Sherlock Holmes.
Definitely.
Because the whole film, it looks like he's thinking and working things out.
My favourite bit with him is, you kind of mentioned it earlier with your question about the what to give the patient.
Yeah.
Tea, coffee, and a little wine.
Yeah,
which I thought was great.
You know, wine.
But that whole scene where he's doing the blood transfusion, I was just transfixed.
Yeah.
He was amazing. He's just so deft the way he was kind of handling the equipment and doing the tubes of the blood transfusion. Mm. I just sat there thinking, wow, he must be a real doctor. Yeah. It was just,
I mean,
really
Christian
good.
Spirit. And Christopher Lee as well.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not got a huge amount to say or do, really, but he has a great, I mean, actually, he's well shot, Christopher Lee, in all this.
Yeah, yes.
Silhouettes.
Yeah.
Cameras, low angles, to really showing his height and power.
Yeah. Definitely. I was disappointed there, to be honest. I wish he had more dialogue.
Yeah.
I really wish he'd had more dialogue. I think the filmmaker should definitely have.
Well, I think in The Prince of Darkness, he barely has any dialogue.
Yeah, no, I think, I read that. I've not seen it.
I think Christopher Lee says that he refused to say the dialogue because it was terrible. The guy who wrote it says he didn't write him any dialogue, so who knows what the truth is.
Yeah.
But probably somewhere in the middle, he didn't write much dialogue, and probably Christopher Lee probably refused to say certain little lines because he didn't think they were good enough. But his presence on screen, you can totally see why they were begging him to come back as Dracula.
Yeah,
because he just completely has mastery over it. But Peter Cushing's fantastic in it.
Actually, the bit with the best bits of the film, or the best bit of the film, is the bit with both of them together, and that's the ending.
Yeah,
absolutely great ending. I mean, like I said, I wasn't really blown away by the film, but both me and Flick kind of stopped playing with our iPhones and kind of looked up to actually look at the ending, because it was really, really very good.
Yeah, it's well done, though, and the great effects of Dracula melting in the sunlight, slowly dissolving away.
I'll play it straight. It's not convincing. I didn't really believe it.
No, but I mean, back then it would have been convincing. It would have been a fantastic effect for 1958.
Definitely, but I think what did it for me was the actual fight sequence between them, because it was quite a believable fight sequence.
It is. The only thing that annoyed me about that was when Peter Cushing picked up the two candlesticks and turned them into a cross. I was like, if that's all it takes, then he's rubbish. Yeah, like Eddie Izzard makes a joke about, does it work with just fingers? Does you just hold up your fingers in a cross? It's like, how does Dracula do anything?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The only thing I could think of is that he's somehow weakened because of this daylight, and so that it wouldn't affect him otherwise, but in his weakened state, he gets affected by the...
In the book, sunlight doesn't kill him.
No, it just weakens him.
Yeah. So they've kind of taken a bit. But you're right. I mean, it does make a mockery, really, of Dracula. You're like, oh, it's Dracula. Yeah. Ooh. And then you're like, oh, but he can't go out in sunlight. And if there's any cross-shaped objects near him, he's weakened. Oh, and he can only sleep on his soil from his home country.
That's from the original.
That is from the book.
Yeah.
But you're just kind of like,
there's loads of weakness. Garlic.
Garlic.
As well. But it's interesting that some of the things they decide...
I'm surprised Dracula gets home at night, to be honest. Or during the day.
There is a little bit, actually, where because there is also a thing that he can't cross running water.
Oh, is that in the book? I know it's a thing. I don't know.
I can't remember if it's in the book or not. It's certainly a myth of vampires from that time. But I noticed right at the very beginning, there's running water in front of the castle.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, it's a nice castle. And then as soon as he walks, crosses the running water, suddenly goes, and suddenly it's really cold. I think actually in some of the later Hammer horror films, he falls in running water and that kills him and things like that. So yeah, he's so easily killed. It's amazing he could do anything.
A 5-year-old could kill Dracula, really, couldn't they?
But interesting, in the book, he can turn into a bat. He can turn into a wolf as well. Yeah. Whereas in this film, they say he can't do that. But I think in later ones he can. But they say, can't he turn into a wolf? And he goes, oh, that's a common misunderstanding. It's a myth about vampires.
It's funny. It's funny how scriptwriters pick and choose which rules.
Do you know what amazed me? For a British film being released in 1958, they scrapped the only American character from the book.
Oh yeah, Quincy Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you would have thought that it would have been a shoo-in as the, a character for them to have. With Peter
particularly
Cush,
if they're trying to
crack an American market. It seems like an obvious thing to have.
It's very true. Actually.
And
it,
I mean, to be honest, in the book he comes across as a token American to get the American interest. So, I was... I find that really strange that they scrapped...
Yeah, that's true, actually.
They scrapped the one American character so they could have had an American voice.
Odd.
Whereas, you know, in
some... Although, to be fair... Oh, yeah, I was going to say about the... Another thing I forgot to mention earlier, the comedy East End accents in The Inn.
Oh, yeah.
That was just... I mean, fair enough. If you're not going to... It's fair enough not to do kind of accents in a film. But if you're going to have, like, an authentic kind of Transylvanian inn, don't people it with people from, like, Bow. It's just kind of like, all right, Governor, that wasn't Piers.
I mean, that doesn't... To be honest, though, in a funny way, that doesn't really... Because that doesn't really bother me so much, because initially I was like, are they speaking English? Because I forgot that they don't go to England. So originally I'm thinking...
Well, yeah, I didn't get that.
Initially
I was
like, oh, Arthur's gone. They've gone back to England now.
Exactly.
Then I was like, oh, they haven't.
Yeah.
You know, and especially at the ending when they race back to Draco's castle. I'm like, they're in the same bloody country.
See,
aren't they?
I didn't really
get
that.
I had to keep reminding myself. Yeah.
I didn't get that until the ending when I was thinking, oh, they're going to have a really long... Chase all the way across Europe.
Yeah.
The horses must be really tired by now. Oh, no, hold on, wait a minute.
Yeah, I know. It's but that's the funny thing, and I kept forgetting that. But so if you take it, it all takes place in the same country, and they're all speaking English anyway, well, it doesn't really matter that they've got Cockney accents, because they just represent the working class in that particular country.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
I suppose so, but, I mean, it just sounded really
I
odd.
I still find it weird that they didn't go back to England. Really odd.
One thing, I was trying to work out why, any particular reason they might not have done that. Because I think, for me, the book...
Pacing, I suppose?
Yeah.
Just, it gets...
Yeah,
you don't have to have, I don't know, more expense. You know, you don't have to show the ship,
That's what I thought, because if they're going to have a ship, they're gonna that's a whole other set.
But then, you know, I suppose you don't really have to have that, could you? You could easily just say, in passing, like...
Yeah,
the ship arrived on the coast of England or something like that.
A spinning newspaper headline.
Well, maybe not quite.
Well, that's what it was in the book. It wasn't spinning in the book. But they did report it in the newspapers.
I do remember, I did like the use of wax cylinders. Because that's in the book a lot. And then they have that whole, like... And I was kind of, like, waiting for that to come back a bit, where he used it. But he doesn't at all. It's just, like, again, a really quite poor throwaway gag. Where it's like... I heard you talking to someone. So he goes, I was talking to myself. He's like, oh!
Yeah.
Kind of Van Helsing's butler going, Your boss is a vampire hunter. You've probably seen and heard of weirder things than that. It's...
Yeah, fair point. That is fair point. He did seem a bit slow on the uptake, though, to be fair. Anyway, I was going to say, actually, I thought that was actually a really nice scene. Another one of the scenes that I thought just was kind of interesting and fitted quite well. Because he was listening to the wax cylinder, it was kind of giving the exposition, explaining to the audiences, okay, they don't like, vampires don't like garlic, they don't like sunlight, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of what could be quite a dull exposition scene that was done in kind of an interesting way.
Yeah,
so
exactly, yeah. No, I thought that was, and I think that's the idea, I mean, it's you were saying, oh, it's quite slow, but for 1958, that must have been so fast. That must have been quick, really.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like bam, I said, bam, I'm judging it by today's standards.
Yeah,
so,
which is fair enough. Because after Lucy's killed, when she comes back as a vampire, we were talking about poor actor. I think she did quite well as that, as the kind of slightly girlish but evil.
I think she.
Lady.
Yeah, she was definitely another highlight. I think, but like I said, terrifying eyes.
And why did they add? That was annoying me. They added a little child into it. A child actor. Yeah, it's
like
annoying little girl. Then
adding, it's the equivalent of adding a cuddly CGI pet.
And she genuinely did talk. Like,
it was Lucy.
Yeah. But what made me laugh was when after Dracula then seduces Arthur's wife, Mina, she in the morning you see her and she's got one hell of a smile on her face. Yeah, it's quite amusing how
she surprised she's not smoking a cigarette.
She's like, I've been out for a walk.
Yeah, and she's like, I've been out for a walk. Oh yeah. Love a duck.
But it you know, Arthur seems very ineffectual the whole way through.
Yeah.
He's
not happy when Dracula's sucking his wife.
No, he certainly isn't. But the whole point is supposed to be he is supposed to be like, way out of his depth. But he does seem completely useless the whole time.
Yeah,
you almost think just.
Oh, he's also
just
got
Van Helsing. Just go, oh, for fuck's sake, Arthur.
Oh yes, he also has the worst line in the film, which is.
This is the worst bit, then.
The worst line of the film, which is there no other way?
Oh yeah, that is terrible.
That is
such
a terrible.
That's in the crypt, isn't it? Where,
is there no other way?
See, my worst line is the boy delivering the message.
Oh yeah, that's.
Hello, miss. Yeah, it's terrible. But I thought that. I mean the. One of the strongest bits I thought was in that same crypt. It's interesting, actually. There are two stakings in the film.
Yeah.
In the first one, Jonathan stakes
the bride of Dracula,
the first kind of woman or slave woman that Dracula has, and the camera, I think it's well done. Kind of cuts to like the shadow of him staking her, so you don't see it.
Yeah.
And then the second time, and I was expecting perhaps something again, or perhaps it cut to Peter Cushing looking away and just like that. And instead it just shows him staking her in quite close-up of actually putting the stake into her and blood spurting out.
Yeah, no, it's good.
And I was wondering if they only felt they could get away with one staking. It would be banned otherwise.
I bet the censorship board probably said,
You
have to do this.
Well, at the top, back then, censorship boards tended to work quite closely with filmmakers. Often filmmakers were in contact with the censorship board before they even started recording, saying, see what they could get away with.
Yeah.
And I bet you they said, all right, you can have one close-up staking, kind of two.
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason why. Yeah, and it is quite shocking, that second one, because, or maybe it's because you're lulled into thinking they're not going to show it, and then they show it. And, I know it's bright blood, that red, really, like, red paint blood, and really, really bright. But it is like surprising, because I wasn't expecting to see it. And then you're shown, you're like, oh. Yeah, it's still pretty gruesome now to see a woman being staked through the heart with a wooden stake. Yeah, even to my...
Hammered in very paint,
even though, obviously,
very slowly.
We see that pretty much daily on the tube. Stokes again. Excuse me. Yeah, you don't even bat an eyelid.
The vampire infestation on the tube is
it's
pretty terrible nowadays.
It's awful. But, so you didn't find this particularly scary, despite it being a Halloween.
I didn't find it scary whatsoever. I found that probably the cycle journey over here was scarier than watching Dracula. But, it stands to reason. 1958, it's a long time ago. Hmm. I think when it was released, I read it had an X rating. When it was re-released in 2007, it got a 12A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know, really, doesn't
it? Yeah, definitely, I suppose.
So, not a scary film.
No.
But an interesting film.
Yeah, I'd say definitely.
I'd say this is not something you would go out and, rent from Blockbusters for a kind of scary night in. But at the same time, if you're interested in the history of horror, it's quite an interesting watch. And, it is a well-made film. But it's not a good film, I don't think, if you were judging it by today's standards.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree, but I think mine is slightly coloured by my, as I say, because I saw it when I was quite young. And I think for that reason, and that reason alone, it has a certain... Yeah, I have a certain fondness for it, I guess, which means I kind of can...
You can
filter out the really poor bits and and sort of see the kind of bits I like instead. And sort of, still appreciate it for its time, but also... quite enjoy the ridiculous of it. I'll tell you one we think maybe, like, I don't know if I should, I was hoping the RO was to mention this or not, but when I was watching the film this time, the sequence where right at the beginning of the film where Jonathan's first come to see Dracula, and he goes into his room, Dracula takes him up to his room, and then he kind of lets himself out, And sort of creeps around the place. Oh, no, sorry, the Dracula's wife, or the bride of Dracula, unlocks his door.
Yeah.
So he can sort of come out, and he's looking for her, and she's pretending that she's being trapped there.
Yeah.
Kept there against her will by Dracula. And then she reveals herself to be a vampire. And there's that great sequence. Oh, well, I thought it's almost like two animals hissing at each other.
Yeah,
fighting over this prey.
Yeah.
It's you know, like she sort of attacks him, and Dracula comes and just hisses and
pushes
her away. And like a dog sort of growling at another dog to keep away from its bit of food.
Yeah.
But during that sequence, I paused it, and because I was kind of like making a cup of tea in the kettle boiled, I paused it, popped out. And when I came back in, I'd paused it on a bit with the vampire woman kind of like looking up, like on the floor, looking up just after she's kind of been pushed away, it's like looking up. And she really looked like an ex-girlfriend of mine.
Oh, no.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's quite flattering, I suppose. You know, she's got a sexy vampire lady with her, you know, with that low-cut top. Yeah, very, you know, I thought that was quite amusing, all the women wearing kind of low-cut tops.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I was just like, oh, my God.
it's like one of our dress-up games.
Anyway.
No comment.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for telling me that little story.
Just made me laugh. Can you think which one I mean?
Probably.
The last one. It was the last one.
Oh, yeah. So. Okay. But, that one.
Name no names. So, yes, yeah, so I get we've already answered that. You would recommend it to others, but with a massive proviso.
I would recommend it to people who are interested in film history, but not necessarily as a film just to watch.
Just to watch. Just to... more of a film to endure.
More of a film to... Yeah. To,
well...
It's an interesting historical document.
Yes.
Is what okay. I think it is.
Well, what I would suggest is show it to a 10-year-old. So if you've got a 10-year-old, show it to them. They'll find it a bit scary. But they'll also grow up with a fondness for it. I think that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I'd like to just chip in here and say, don't show horror films to 10-year-olds.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad. It's good for them.
What, that little staking won't hurt anyone.
Yeah, I suppose that's the most kind of brutal bit.
Don't show them that bit. Just show them the comedy Undertaker.
Yeah, and the extremely sexually charged moments.
Yeah, don't show this to your 10-year-olds. As long as they're 12A.
12A, yes. Yeah, so adult supervision.
Fine. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. Watch it with them when they're 12.
Sit them down. Say, right. It'll be quite nice for a father and son to go through, use the 101 films. You should have seen it as a kind of bonding thing.
Yeah, it'd be good.
They're like, well, I've only got Kevin at weekends, so what I thought we would do is we'd listen to 101 films you should have seen, podcast, or you should see. What's it called? You should see or you should have seen.
You should have seen.
You should have seen.
God, bloody hell.
And we'll watch the film and then listen to the podcast afterwards.
I don't think he'd have custody for much longer if that's what he was doing with his little kid at weekend.
Right, so... Shall we finish on a...
Oh, God.
No.
Oh, yeah. He's got it out again.
I've straight away inserted a scream.
Oh, God.
Okay, so, Lewis, it's our Halloween special.
Right.
As there's not much music in...
Dracula. Well, there's a lot of dreadful music.
Well, yeah, but it's mostly like... Dun-dun.
For 90 minutes.
Yeah, which is not really... you can't really replicate it on the ukulele. So I thought I'd do a Halloween classic. Ooh, dear. Ooh. Oh, dear. So what... well, you know.
I know this.
This unusually, you know. Normally I try and keep it secret, but I was playing it and you were like, what's that? And I was like, can you tell? You're like, no. So I had to tell you, and then you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
to be fair, it could be a...
They all sound the same on the ukulele. That's the great thing about the ukulele.
You can never get it wrong, because it's never right in the first place.
Now, there's one song they play every Halloween. And I like this song. I think it's a really ludicrous, stupid, novelty, one-hit wonder.
I think practically when I met you, the first thing you said was,
I love the Monster Mash. No, I don't think I said that.
So yes, it's the Monster Mash.
By Bobby Boris Pickett.
I never knew that, to be fair.
I didn't know.
Did he have many other hits?
No, I think this is his one hit.
Yeah,
Once Upon a Time. And I'll probably mention this again when we get round to doing the Valentine's podcast. But sometimes you think something and then you catch yourself. And you're like, God, I'm stupid. You ever have those moments where you're shocked by how stupid you can think. You think of something, you're like, what? And I remember it was Halloween, I played this. And I remember thinking, oh yeah, you have songs at Christmas time for Christmas. And I was like, why aren't there any songs for Valentine's Day? And I was like, oh, hang on. 95% of songs are about love. So, I think it's because there's not one song they play every Valentine's. Basically, I was thinking, why isn't there a song that goes out, Valentine's Day, it's Valentine's Day, or something. But I was like, why isn't there a song for Valentine's Day? It's an obvious one to go for.
Oh, my God. What other days aren't there songs for?
Easter.
Yeah. There's no. What, are there? No, there aren't. I can't think of any Easter songs.
Eggs, lovely eggs.
I think that one passed me by. Rosh Hashanah.
No, I can't think of any of those. I mean, that's just a generic.
That's
Jewish
just generic.
Song.
Yeah.
generic Jewish song.
Shrove Tuesday.
They used to have an advert for advertising lemons, didn't they? Do you remember those adverts? Every pancake, though, they would advertise...
Jif Lemon.
Jif Lemon, yeah.
Don't forget the pancakes for Jif Lemon Day. That was it. That was a great line.
It's weird, though, isn't it? I mean, they don't have adverts like that anymore. No. You can't really buy them. I've never seen that lemon juice.
Jif Lemon? Yeah. It's because it's horrible.
Well, it's just lemon juice. What do you expect?
Well, it's lemon juice with preservatives
in it. Yeah, I suppose so. And also, it's like, well, just get a lemon.
Yeah.
but you know what?
They're like 20p.
You know what? My mum always bought Jif Lemon juice and all the little plastic lemon you used to get.
Those adverts work.
Yeah. Did you? I bet your mum did.
Yeah, she did. We never had real lemons. It was always Jif.
Well, we can't get real lemons.
Come out year after year.
Me and Lewis were born in the Second World War, so obviously we didn't see our first lemon until we were 22 after D-Mob.
Well, I don't think I saw spaghetti not out of a tin until I was at university.
Anyway, so Monster Mash.
Yep.
Now, I think as we've established, I can't play and sing at the same time. So I'm going to ask Lewis to sing along here.
Okay.
Can you do that for me, Lewis?
Yeah, we'll do it. Let's just do two verses in the...
Well, we can't do more than 30 seconds, otherwise we'll be infringing copyright.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, I doubt Bobby Boris Pickett's going to listen to this, but maybe the owners
We'll just do the first verse and the chorus then.
All right. Okay, ready?
Alright, here we go.
Okay.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for a monster from his slab began to rise.
You've gone in too late. I'll do one kind of set, okay. and then you've got to count me in. Alright, okay. I'll nod at you. When I stamp on your foot and say, now's the time to sing.
Oh, no. Okay. I can't do this again. All right.
Okay, right, all right, so.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the mash. He did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
He caught on in a flash.
The mash.
He did the Monster Mash.
Oh, that was terrible. Okay, enough. That's it.
I really want to carry on singing it. From a laboratory in the castle east.
It's good.
The shame we can't get up to the line where Dracula actually says, where is it? It's a... Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist? Out of his coffin, Drac's voice did ring. Well, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. It's a shame there aren't any songs for... Oh, no, there are.
That's there aren't any good songs. Thriller. I could have done Thriller, couldn't I?
That's true. I'm glad you didn't, though.
That would have been trickier. We could have done the dance. If we're still doing this next year, me and Lewis will put up a... I promise you now, dear listener, that me and Lewis will put up a video of us doing the entire Thriller video.
We should just have a webcam doing this.
Well, then people will see we're doing it topless.
Oh.
Maybe that'll increase our listenership.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, it's time to get back into our coffins. Yes. Seal ourselves in for as dawn approaches.
Yep.
Oh, before we do, let's feast on a virgin. It'll be tricky to find one in Leytonstone.
Yeah, it's true. I was going to say. Especially at this time of night.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point hanging around O'Neill's. No virgins in there. But, I'm trying to think of a Vincent Price style kind of farewell. Go on, do a Vincent Price impression.
I can't.
Farewell! It's I, Vincent Price. I can't do his voice.
I can't do it either.
Now
is our winter of discontent.
This is awful. Alright, well, stay tuned and
blood.
I used to be able to do a really creaky, great creaky door with my voice.
Oh, go on, do it.
I don't know if I could still do it.
Terrible. No. We'll put a sound effect in there.
Sound good there. All right, okay, now let's see.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.